Pro teams have millions to spend, and they don't always spend them wisely. But when it comes to a great shave, you don't have to shell out tons of cash. Harry's saw customers getting ripped off by the shaving industry, with overpriced, underperforming products, and decided to do something better. They found their own way to make beautifully designed razors for a fraction of the price of the other big brands, so you never wonder if you overpaid. Harry's shaving products look great, and the weighted handle makes shaving feel great too. I like to keep my beard neat, and Harry's always leaves me with a smooth yet crisp shave. Harry's quality is top-notch, thanks to German-engineered blades made in their own factory that stay sharp longer. You can get a 5-blade razor, weighted handle, foaming shave gel, and a travel cover for just $3 at harrys.com/bluewire. And Harry's has the highest customer satisfaction in the shaving industry, plus a convenient subscription option that you can cancel at any time. Getting the best doesn't mean spending the most when you shave with Harry's. Get started with a $13 trial set for just $3 at harrys.com/bluewire. That's harrys.com/bluewire for a $3 trial set.
This podcast episode is brought to you by Coors Light. These days, everything is go, go, go. It's nonstop hustle all the time. Work, friends, family expect you to be on 24/7. Well, sometimes you just need to reach for a Coors Light because it's made to chill. Coors Light is cold lagered, cold filtered, and cold packaged. It's as crisp and refreshing as the Colorado Rockies. It is literally made to chill. Coors Light is the one I choose when I need to unwind. So when you want to hit reset, reach for the beer that's made to chill. Get Coors Light in the new look delivered straight to your door with Drizzly or Instacart. Celebrate responsibly. Coors Brewing Company, Golden, Colorado.
Welcome to the RotoWire Mixed Martial Arts Podcast. I'm Jake Litarski, joined today by John Littering. If you're out there on Twitter, give John a follow at JonLitterine. You can follow me at RotoJake. Today we're going to be making our picks for the biggest fights at UFC 261, Usman versus Masvidal. It's the rematch here. A couple quick housekeeping things. Sports betting section on RotoWire is alive and well. A couple columns every pay-per-view week to get you set. And we list the odds in a nice clean table where you can sort all your props. Definitely check that out. That's all free. No subscription, no account even required to check that out. Also, Fight IQ is going to be coming back to the YouTube channel Friday. Chris, Joe, and Sean will be breaking down the card from top to bottom here. And I think that's all I've got for housekeeping. So, John, how you been? I mean, I'm looking, you know, through the past couple of fights here, the biggest stories in combat sports, you know, outside of the circus, if you will, on Saturday is overshining that, I hope, to the purists out there, is Robert Whittaker, Bobby Knuckles just kind of dismantling Kelvin Gastelum. It didn't even seem that close to me here. You think he's next up for the belt?
I would think he has to be. I think people underrate how good Kelvin Gastelum is. Mm-hmm. And Robert Whittaker just destroyed him. It wasn't even close. It was just like next level.
My brother like called up Sherdog and looked. He's like, well, Kelvin Gastelum's lost like 4 out of his last how many? I'm like, but look who he's fought. The guy is no joke.
No, he's definitely no joke. And it's just there was just such a gap between the two. You know, I thought it was going to be a competitive fight. I was very, very surprised that there was such a gap between the two. I thought Gastelum would at least hold his own till the latter stages of the fight, but it really wasn't close. And I think it speaks more to everything we've seen from Whittaker than anything Gastelum's done wrong. But, you know, in this sport, you are what your record says you are. And yeah, Kelvin Gastelum has been really facing really good competition, but you know what? He's not winning. And at some point you got to win. You can accept all the fights you want against lesser competition, but at some point you got to win, and he's not winning.
I keep thinking back into my head, Izzy tasted his hands when they fought. That was one of the best fights of the year when Gastelum fought Izzy, but you know, Adesanya came through in the end there, and you have to wonder if we'll have a different outcome when we start talking about Whitaker Adesanya 2, hopefully a few months down the road here. I mean, it doesn't look like Whitaker took a ton of damage. You never really know, but that'll be one that we'll talk about as the whole later schedule of 2021 starts to shape up here. But first, let's hit what's in front of us here, John. Three title fights. I mean, the UFC is going to be back in front of a live crowd. I heard the thing sold out in minutes. They're going back to ViStar Veterans Memorial Coliseum in Jacksonville, Florida. If you remember when the UFC said they were going to be the first event back, you know, that arena, that venue, you know, the state of Florida was the first place that kind of let them. And now, of course, you know, to pay it back and run it back, they're going to do it in front of a full crowd. We have a rematch here, John. It's an interesting one. I know you weren't so hot on this matchmaking here in your preview, but let's discuss nonetheless. Kamaru Usman, Jorge Masvidal. Usman, big favorite, minus 400 to minus 450, anywhere in that range. Puts the comeback on Masvidal roughly plus 335. 9,400 on DraftKings for Usman. Masvidal 6,800, but Masvidal is tough, so Vegas likes this one to again see the judges, just like the first time when they fought, when it went all 25 minutes. The odds of the finish here are plus 160. John, I've been racking my brain to try to at least make a case for Masvidal to make this show a little bit interesting, but can you think of any reason why this fight would be different from the first one?
I can't. I guess if you're a Masvidal supporter and you want to look at something and say, well, what's different between the first fight between the two? Jorge should have a full camp under his belt for this one. Mm-hmm. I guess that's something.
That's the big one. He turned and looked at Dana and said, six weeks after that first fight.
Yeah. He, you know, I think he'll probably be better than he was in the first fight. Obviously, as we were talking, that's not a gigantic bar to clear. He did not look good in the first fight between the two. But I certainly have I couldn't make a case for him actually winning. I was really probably more impressed with Kamaru Usman's win over Gilbert Burns than maybe any of his other wins. And the reason for that is just because the punishment he took early. He was in real, real trouble against Gilbert Burns. And to me, bouncing back from that is even more impressive than just blowing through somebody. You know, anybody can just, you know, destroy anybody. But when you're really in trouble, like he was against Burns, and show that ability to bounce back, that's the mark of a champion. And I think it's the real reason that you're going to find a guy in Usman who has the ability to hold the belt for an extended period of time. You know, in this sport, it seems like belts are turning over all the time. But this is a guy who is legitimately one of the best pound-for-pound fighters in the world and is in reasonable position, I think, at least, to hold the belt in this division for an extended period of time.
I can see him moving up those pound-for-pound rankings for sure. I mean, every category, whether we're looking physically in terms of height, reach, age, or statistically in terms of your strikes landed, takedowns landed, and the defensive side of those, all of those lie in the side of Usman. And plus, like you mentioned, we have a whole 25-minute sample size of a fight where two out of the three judges basically said Masvidal didn't win a round. Masvidal came out and outlanded Usman 24-18 in the very first round and then could not get the edge in significant strikes in any of the other ones. And of course, Usman took him down five times. Masvidal was unable to get a takedown there. He's, you know, not much of an offensive wrestler there. And that skill alone, with that being elite for Usman, that's another reason, like you said, that he's complete enough to be a champion for a long time here. My only note that I had down for Masvidal, like you nailed, John, if there's any narrative, it's the short notice aspect the first time around. Now he gets a full camp. But, you know, these guys are getting up there, and I just don't see how this one goes under any differently. And in terms of DraftKings and fantasy scoring, I mean, with really no grappling points the last time around, Masvidal, he only had 31 DraftKings points in 25 minutes. So I'd probably rule out stacks here too, for sure, which sometimes you consider with these five-round main events. But there's 3 5-round title fights here that we're going to discuss. So probably throw that out. I guess when it comes down to it, like, to put you on the spot, if you made 100 lineups, if you mass entered something, what number of those use Masvidal?
Very little. 5, maybe.
Yep.
It's tiny. It's tiny. Mm-hmm. It's, you know, it's, I don't think this event is taking place in Jacksonville, like you said. And I don't, obviously, it's the first fight, the first card with fans since all this, you know, the COVID stuff happened. And I don't think that there's any way that Jorge Masvidal would be getting this shot again so soon after the way the first fight went, mm-hmm. if this card wasn't taking place in Florida. I know it sounds crazy, but he's a lifelong born and bred Floridian, and he's extremely popular everywhere, but he's especially popular in Florida. Mm-hmm. And
I don't know, he did his best to curb that down in the last year with some of his antics, but yeah, he's popular there, at least in Florida. The crowd will definitely – the Florida crowd will be behind Masvidal. There's no doubt in my mind about that.
There will, and you know, like we say all the time, first and foremost – the UFC is a – well, although, you know, it's been so long since there's been fans, you know, probably would have sold out no matter who was fighting. But, you know, the UFC, first and foremost, is a for-profit or company. You know, they're there to make money. And if they think that's the matchup that's going to give them the most money, that's who's going to be fighting.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, so Usman here, I guess the question that we'll get to in a little bit is, like, is Usman the high-priced fighter out of the high-priced tier that you kind of build around here? I personally can see it because, especially with the new DraftKings scoring, you know, that took place at the start of this year, the control time, the wrestling, and you know, the high volume of strikes. He very rarely scores under 100 DraftKings points. I think he's a
pro. Teams have millions to spend, and they don't always spend them wisely. But when it comes to a great shave, you don't have to shell out tons of cash. Harry's saw customers getting ripped off by the shaving industry with overpriced, underperforming products and decided to do something better. They found their own way to make beautifully designed razors for a fraction of the price of the other big brands, so you never wonder if you overpaid. Harry's shaving products look great, and the weighted handle makes shaving feel great too. I like to keep my beard neat, and Harry's always leaves me with a smooth yet crisp shave. Harry's quality is top-notch, thanks to German-engineered blades made in their own factory that stay sharp longer. You can get a 5-blade razor, weighted handle, foaming shave gel, and a travel cover for just $3 at harrys.com/bluewire. And Harry's has the highest customer satisfaction in the shaving industry, plus a convenient subscription option that you can cancel at any time. Getting the best doesn't mean spending the most when you shave with Harry's. Get started with a $13 trial set for just $3 at harrys.com/bluewire. That's harrys.com/bluewire for a $3 trial set.
Great cash game foundation there.
Yeah, he, you know, it's just there's no real weaknesses to his game. It's like it's really even trying to find something that's like average is difficult. Mm-hmm. Like the guy's that good. And, exactly. You know, I would have preferred to see him fight Leon Edwards. I thought that was just a better fight just overall. But, you know, it is what it is.
And yeah, last Edwards fight ended with the eye poke, it's tough to just be like, okay, Edwards, you get a title shot coming off of that.
He hadn't fought for 3 years before that or whatever the heck it was. Well,
and Edwards just isn't as popular. You got to face it. So
that's part of it.
He could get there. He could definitely get there. But and Edwards and Usman, we'll see the cage at one point or another. But we'll start with this one first here. So
the economy is made up of real people doing real stuff. And it affects everything. Which you obviously know since you're a real person doing real stuff. Marketplace is here to help you get smart about everything beyond the what of the day's business and economic news. We dig into the how and the why with the real people driving our economy. From big tech and interest rates to small businesses and what's happening at the Fed, Marketplace breaks it all down so you don't have to. Listen to Marketplace wherever you get your podcasts.
Usman, that was pretty easy for both of us. Let's keep her moving here. Like I said, 3 title fights to talk about. So let's talk about Zhang Weili defending her belt against Rose Namajunas. Zhang is 9,000 on DraftKings, 7,200 for Rose. Zhang, out of the three big champions, she's the least in terms of the betting odds, in terms of favorite at only minus 200. Comeback on Rose, approximately plus 170. I find it a little funny that the odds to finish on this fight are plus 110, so Vegas seems to like this to get finished more than the Usman-Masvidal one. I guess what's your general impression of this fight here? It's been a year since we saw Weili Zhang. She's absolute war with Joanna, so it's probably good she took the time off here. How do you think she looks upon coming back here?
I think this is probably the most competitive of the three title fights by a significant margin. Zhang has looked great, but the obviously concern is that it's a small sample size. You know, this is a woman who has 22 professional fights under her belt, but the only two real meaningful fights we've seen from her was her 42-second knockout win over Jessica Andrade, who we're going to talk about in a minute, and the Joanna fight, which she won via split decision. So if you're just looking as far as background and the quality of opposition the two women had have faced, you know, that's certainly in Rose's favor. I think Rose probably keeps this more competitive than a lot of other people think. Rose is rarely underwhelmed inside the octagon. She's exceedingly well prepared. Her and her fiance Pat Barry have really improved her striking to the point where it was a clear weakness early in her career, and now only not as an average. I'd argue that it's a strength. And Rose has seemed like she's been around forever, but she won't turn 29 years of age until late June, so she could still theoretically be entering her athletic prime. And she only has 14 pro fights under her belt. You would think it'd be more considering how long she's seemingly been around, but she hasn't been in a ton of fights. Rose is more methodical. Zhang certainly has an explosiveness edge that I don't think Rose can match. So it would behoove Rose not to fall behind on the scorecards in this fight, simply because I don't know if she can make up the difference in a short amount of time. But Rose is deceptive. She's always been deceptively strong. She rarely loses in tight. She's good along the cage. Her cardio has always been great. She's great on the mat, and now her striking has improved. So I would certainly not be surprised if Rose won this fight. I think she certainly has a better chance than the odds and salaries are dictating. But it's going to be difficult against a woman who, as we said, small sample size applies, but a woman who lands 6.38 significant strikes, land, you know, the volume with Zhang is massive. 6.38 per minute. She absorbs 4.43, which is hefty too, but 6.38 is a big number.
Yeah, so the 4.43 absorbed thing, we just need to remember that that number is pretty wildly skewed because she ate 186 significant strikes from Joanna. You take that out, she's elite, you know, probably with the rest of the division. And you can't just take one fight off. I know it's kind of arbitrary, but I mean, 186, if you see that sample size and think, oh man, Rose is going to get her, really the only person to touch her up like that has been Joanna.
Yeah, and you know, it shows that Zhang is willing to go back and forth. You know, she's not just one of those who will pick her spots and bob and weave. She's willing to get in there and trade. And I don't think that's Rose's best path to victory. You know, Rose's best path is always her wrestling and her ground game. But yeah, I'm interested if this turns into a kickboxing match, I'm interested in seeing how Rose fares, because you know, Zhang essentially went blow for blow with Joanna, and it was pretty even. And the two fights between Rose and Joanna, Rose won handily on the strength of her striking. So obviously, you know, different fighters, different matchups and everything. But, you know, I think Rose is a live underdog here, and I'd be pretty surprised if this isn't the most competitive of the three title fights.
Yeah, I like the MMA math there because, I mean, you're right. Rose took care of Joanna twice. It wasn't that close, and then Joanna faces Wiley Zhang, and it's the best women's fight of all time, one of the best fights of all time, period. So you got to love what, you know, what that transitive property, whatever you want to call it, of MMA math here says for Rose. And, you know, I'm with you. She's right there. But in the end, I have to go and pick Zhang. I mean, outside of the Andrade fight for Zhang, she's gotten a takedown in every single fight. So, you know, there's some offensive wrestling there. She has never been taken down in her UFC career. Now, granted, we have a 5-fight UFC sample size, but still, she's never been taken down in her UFC career. And outside of the Joanna fight, the most strikes time she's ever been hit in any fight, even a 15-minute one, has been 34 times, and that's a fight that she, you know, seriously dominated here. So you talk about prime of their career, Wiley Zhang 31. I like that Wiley Zhang took enough time off after the war with Joanna. She certainly learned a lot in the war with Joanna, and I think she's going to keep rolling here. I think we're going to see Ann still, but Rose's interesting here. There are not a lot of favorites on this card, and I think I would be mass entering here. Theoretically, I'd probably be a little bit above the field on Rose.
Oh, yeah, I would definitely be a little above the field. You know, I think there's value here, and I think this should give us a pretty good idea of really Zhang's ceiling, I think, because, you know, she obviously the Joanna fight was back and forth, and what she did to Andrade was great. But, you know, Rose, no one really goes in and makes Rose look stupid. You know, Rose is, keeps it competitive. So I'm interested to see how close this one really is, because on paper, I don't see an $1,800 difference between the two in salaries.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, yeah, I'm with you here. Let's talk about the other women's title fight, though. We've got Valentina Shevchenko against Jessica Andrade. Andrade moving up from strawweight to compete for the flyweight belt. She took care of Caitlin Chookagian and is now getting that title shot right away. You talk about depth of the division in your article a lot, John. There isn't a whole lot here, but this fight does interest me to some degree here. Shevchenko's 9,500 on DraftKings. That makes her the most expensive fighter on the card. Andrade's comeback is 6,700. Shevchenko, this has been an interesting odds situation, because when I posted your article, John, you know, we had her down at -390. And now I'm looking across a lot of the books that I can see, and she's about -400. But then, you know, the legal ones that we're allowed to talk about, really, you know, William H. Caesars, -455 there. DraftKings, -455 there. So she's definitely biggest favorite on the card, and she's gaining steam. So the comeback on Andrade, that puts her around anywhere from -320 to -340, you know, depending on what kind of book you're using here. Odds to finish, -335. Basically means Vegas thinks Valentina Shevchenko is going to get it done. Do you think this is as much of a cakewalk for Bullet here as the odds suggest?
I think it's probably more of a cakewalk than the odds suggest. The numbers seem low to me. I really think that Valentina is bored. I know it sounds crazy. I really think the competition she's facing these days at flyweight is impacting her performance. You know, her last four title defense came against Chookagian, Jennifer Maia, Jessica I, and Liz Carmouche. I mean, it's like, you know, she could go in there blindfolded and she's going to win those fights. You know, she's fighting inferior competition. And it's hard to get up for those kind of fights.
I mean, there's hardly 10 women flyweight fighters to rank now, let alone legitimate title contenders.
No, yeah, it's non-existent. And, you know, I think Andrade will probably do better than the four I just mentioned. But, you know, the bar is really, really low. Mm-hmm. And the easiest way to sum this up for me is to keep it really, you know, without going too deep in depth of styles and those kind of things. The easiest way to sum this fight up is you have a fighter in Jessica Andrade who did virtually all of her successful work in the company at strawweight. You know, she was essentially a fringe roster fighter until she moved down, right? Mm-hmm. And you have a woman in Shevchenko who took Amanda Nunes to the very end twice at bantamweight. So you have Andrade moving up a division from where she had her most success. And you have Shevchenko moving down a division where she fought the best pound for pound fighter in the world twice to the, you know, split decision, you know, as close as it gets. And I really think that's all you need to say. You know, there's the gap in physicality between the two is monumental. And as every UFC, at least the flyweight and the featherweight divisions, everything that happens in those two divisions and bantamweight too is really just a appetizer for the third fight between Nunes and Shevchenko, which we're going to get eventually. It's really just difficult, like you said, when there are like 10 fighters, and Andrade is fighting for the flyweight title. She's not a flyweight fighter. You know, it's because, like you said, there's like 10 legitimate flyweight fighters on the roster, and they have nothing else to do. And I understand, like, you want to, you know, this is your first card in with fans in 13 months or whatever, and you want to get a third title fight on the card. And it's not Shevchenko's fault by any means. Like, what are you going to do? Mm-hmm. They put people in front of you, you beat them.
Yeah.
But it's just really hard to make a compelling case in these kind of fights. Like the one we spoke about with Nunes and Megan Anderson. I think that was our last title defense, right? Like, mm-hmm. It's hard to get up for it, and it's hard to make a stylistic argument because there, at least on paper, there's such just a massive gap between the two.
Yeah, you nailed it. I mean, it's the same argument with Nunes as it is with Shevchenko, where, you know, What gets you out of bed? What gets you excited, you know, these days here? It was kind of like, you know, John Jones at the tail end of his 205 defenses. You know, the last time we saw him out there, he was beating guys. He wasn't killing them. Or, you know, he wasn't destroying them. He wasn't finishing them, you know. But maybe Ngannou gets him out of bed, you know. We'll see. That's a whole other conversation for hopefully another time here. But, yeah, no, I mean, Andrade, I've always liked her as a fighter, especially when, you know, the UFC finally created the divisions for her to move down. She is a former champion, so, I mean, that has some steam. She took care of Rose Namajunas via slam, then immediately lost the belt to Zhang Weili. By knockout in China and kind of on Zhang's turf, and then Andrade from there lost the rematch via split decision to Rose, came up to flyweight, got the finish, first round finish of Caitlin Chookagian, and now here we are. Andrade is really cheap, and I think she's pretty durable. Outside of that Zhang loss, that's the only time she's been knocked out in the UFC. She's been, and it's a long UFC career. She's been subbed a couple times, which I guess is there. I mean, there's big height and reach disparities here between Valentina and Andrade, which you detailed by the description of the weight classes here. And someone with the Muay Thai of Valentina is going to be able to use that to her advantage. That's not to say Andrade is not going to blitz a couple times, and she could connect, I guess. But yeah, I don't really see any way Shevchenko, her path to a Nunes trilogy fight. It's not stopping here necessarily here. So we're on the same page here. We're picking all three champs to retain. I guess any final thoughts on those?
No, not really. I mean, I have more interest in the Masvidal Usman fight than I do this one. It's where we are. It is what it is.
So you think Usman is going to have more DraftKings points than Shevchenko? They're about the same price. That's a really tough one here to figure out, because it's going to be outcome based. And I mean, Shevchenko, according to the odds, is more likely to get the finish. But
yeah, I mean, it entirely. If you assume both are going to win easily, right? Mm-hmm. You're essentially going with the opponent you think is going to last longer, right? Like that's how you're going to rack up the points. And I mean,
yeah, but Usman gets those wrestling points, yeah, and the control time, and he took him down in basically every single round last time.
Yeah, and so, he's $100 cheaper, right? I believe he's 94 and Shevchenko's 95. Yeah, I'd probably take Usman. It's close though.
Yeah, I mean, you're getting exposure to both here, but yeah. So okay, so. Three title fights here. I'm getting on a plane. I'm heading to Vegas on Thursday. All right. And I haven't been out there in a while. Finally good enough to go. I don't really know how to attack these three from a betting angle. So I'm thinking, you know, this is kind of a cop-out, but if I take all three champions to retain their belts, we go minus 400, minus 200, and minus 455. I'm just using the DraftKings Sportsbook or the Caesars William Hill odds here. You know, just, you know, guys that we know, you know, that parlay takes it to about +28. So you can get slight, or +128, excuse me. So you can get slight plus money to just bet on all three champions to retain. And I think that's the route I'm going to go, because I'm not really seeing a lot of upset potential here. It's a pretty chalky top of the card.
Yeah, or I mean, if you want to try and hit a home run, you take Usman and Shevchenko, and then you put Rose in there, and then you get...
Oof, jeez. Yeah, you know, then we really
plus a lot. Run. Yeah.
Plus a lot. Yeah, so
yeah, I mean, it's Usman and Shevchenko, and then, you know, you go from there with whatever you want to make the third or fourth part of the parlay.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, so I guess we'll keep rolling down to see what happens here. We got a middleweight matchup, Uriah Hall, Chris Weidman. Uriah Hall, 8,300. Weidman, 7,900. But Weidman has actually moved to the betting favorite. He's about minus 115 when we posted the article that you had, John, yesterday, and now he's looking at about minus 125.
That surprises me.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, he keeps getting some steam, and I'm not entirely sure why on that. If this goes in this direction, I think I'm going to bet Hall a little bit, but we'll get to the breakdown here first. Uriah Hall, plus 105 here, I guess, looking at these books. You know, some books have still, I'm around minus 110, but and the odds to finish minus 135, which also surprised me a little bit on that. I'm hesitantly going to pick Hall in this one, but I don't really feel great about it. This is a tough one because it's the closest fight on the main card, and where you make your stand here could prove to, you know, steer your lineup in the positive or negative direction.
Yeah, I took Weidman, saved the $400, but yeah, it's just, you know, essentially a pick 'em for me too. It's pretty straightforward. It's really probably going to come down to whether Chris's durability holds up or not. And look, it's Uriah Hall is a pure kickboxer striker, but it's not like Uriah Hall has a big is a high motor guy. You know, Uriah Hall has been accused in the past, and he's openly admitted it. He's a nice guy. He has difficulty just pushing the pedal to the metal and going in and trying to beat the crap out of somebody. It's just not, you know, that's not his personality.
Yeah. I mean, it took a long time to finish 44-year-old Anderson Silva. That's the one thing that I hesitate on that.
Yeah. And I mean, the issue for Chris is that God, I feel so bad. You go back to the first, and we talk about it every time we talk about a Weidman fight. You go back to the title fight where he lost to Luke Rockhold. He lost his belt to Luke Rockhold, and he was in such good shape. And then he went for that spinning nonsense, and his career has like fallen apart since it happened. Mm-hmm. And he's been victim of some crazy commission rules, and he's had countless surgeries, and he's been hurt. And it's been tough, but there's such significant durability issues with Chris. They're both 36 years old, and if Weidman's chin holds up, you don't forget how to wrestle, you know? Yeah. So if maybe Chris can get Uriah to the ground and, rack up some control time. Hall's takedown defense is 69%, which is fine. You know, that's solid average. I took Weidman essentially because I viewed it as a pick'em and I'd wanted to save $400. Mm-hmm. Chris will probably be heavily owned. He's still really popular.
Yeah, despite
the fact he's had a hard time lately. Mm-hmm.
That was kind of my angle on this one. One, everybody knows Chris Weidman's name, the All-American, a former champion. Two, you're getting a ton of line value here. So, like, our default projections model in our lineup optimizer on RotoWire just uses odds implied win percentage, takes the guess out of it and tries to get you the lineup that's going to give you the best odds to have six guys win and or girls win. And so Weidman, that line value for the poker crowd or whatever, he's going to show up in all those optimals unless you start adjusting the projections here. We also have, you know, a projection set to use if you wish. So again, Weidman's ownership in this, you know, I don't try to get into predicting that too much, but I could see him being the most popular fighter below $8,000 for sure. Could see his ownership get up to 30, 40, 45% here just because of the math here. For that reason, I like Hall in this fight a little bit, but you're getting a ton of leverage on the field because how much are people going to pay $8,300 for a underdog here, for a plus money underdog? So that's not going to happen. You know, you get, if you're trying to win GPPs and you want to be different, this is one way you could go about that. Hall has a plus 200 win by knockout prop, which is second on the main card, only to Jim Crute, who we'll talk about here in a second. Crute sits at plus 185. So, yeah, among those pay-per-view card options, I think Hall's someone – it just depends. He's got to let his hands go. Do you think, you know – I don't know. Dana took a shot at him last time about the Silva fight, saying it took him so long. Like, man, it took him that long. You know, he doesn't finish anybody. Will he let his hands go?
He never does. You know, like, look, Hall's won 3 fights in a row, but those 3 wins are over Anderson Silva, who, like you mentioned, he got it, but it was a struggle. Mm-hmm. Antonio Carlos Jr., who he beat via split decision, and I'm fairly positive he's been released since then. I'm almost 100% positive. Yeah. Yep. And, you know, Bevan Lewis, you know, like, it's not like a murderer's row of competition. Mm-hmm. And, you know, and there's also the fact that Hall has a history of, you know, I'm not counting Anderson because it was like the last fight of his career, but Hall has a history of not performing particularly well against better competition. Mm-hmm. Now, no one's saying Weidman's the guy who, you know, beat Anderson Silva for the UFC middleweight title, you know, and was one of the best fighters in the world, but, I think Hall has more gas left in the tank than Weidman. I'm not totally confident about that, but then there's the stylistic issue. Like, if you told me Hall was always aggressive and, like, was constantly pushing forward, I'd pick him in a second because I don't think Chris's chin can hold up. But, like, this is either, for me, probably going to be one of two things. It's either going to be a Hall knockout or it's going to be a boring Weidman win.
Yes, and in a, like, boring Weidman win, you're not scoring a ton of DraftKings points. I know that grappling helps a little bit, but unless Chris is racking up the ground and pound while he's down there, it might not be a great score.
No, and I mean, and I could totally see an instance where if Chris gets a takedown, with like 3 minutes left in a round. Hall's not moving. And Chris is a big dude. Mm-hmm. He's not going to have to do a ton to keep him on the ground. Like, as long as the ref doesn't stand them up, like, Chris can grind his way to the end of the round. Mm-hmm. And then he's not going to score a ton of fantasy points, but, you know, he's going to get a bunch, you know, he's going to bank, you know, points with the judges. So yeah, it is what it is.
The control time will help a little bit, but that's not enough to make a fighter like that suddenly get 100 points in decision. You need to throw some striking volume on there, too.
It's close. I mean, you know, and it comes back to I'd probably get a piece of this fight in some form or fashion only because – you know, we'll talk about it in a minute. The undercard, after you get to the main card of the pay-per-view, the undercard of this is not good. And it's a lot of guys we don't know a lot about. And, you know, we'll get to that in a minute.
Yeah, I found a tougher time picking some dogs here. But yeah, I think in cash games, I'm probably going to stay away from this fight. And then I'm going to try to get some Hall in some tournaments because of the whole leverage aspect. If Hall can come through plus 200, get that knockout, then suddenly I'm above 45% of the field, and I like the look of that heading into the you know, the pay-per-view or the title fights when I have a shot here. But let's keep it moving here. Talk about a light heavyweight matchup here. Some names people will recognize. Anthony Smith going up against Jimmy Crute. Crute 8,900 on DraftKings. Smith comeback 7,300. Crute is about a minus 190 betting favorite. You know, I'm looking around here. I catch him at minus 200 in a couple of places, but about minus 190. So the comeback on Smith, that gives him plus 165, depending on your book. Height and reach go to Smith. Experience goes to Smith. But Crute is 8 years younger and entering his prime. So how do you think this one goes?
So essentially, I have the same concerns about Smith as I have against have about Weidman. And for two different reasons. Weidman, and it's the durability issue. And with Chris, it's because he's just been so banged up and everything. And for Smith, it's just because he's been in so many damn fights. I mean, he has 50 professional fights under his belt, and some of them have been absolute all-out wars. And somehow, and this is one of the crazy – when I was doing writing up the preview article for this card, the craziest – Anthony Smith is only 32 years old. I could not believe that. You know, if you Anthony Smith's been around, he's been multiple runs with the UFC alone. He's fought everywhere under the sun. And somehow, I would have said, how old's Anthony Smith? I don't know, 36, Bellator, 37, something like that. Yeah, he's been everywhere. Yeah, yep. That was unbelievable when I saw that. He's only 32 years old. But I'm wondering if his body's breaking down on him simply because he's been in so many fights. This is, and we've talked about lately with some of the pay-per-view openers where we didn't think they were great fights. This is a really good pay-per-view opener. It's two big, big guys who both fight physically. Mm-hmm. And that's really what you want. You know, you want an action-packed fight, and this should be it. I have a really hard time picking Anthony Smith to win this fight. You know, like you said, you got a guy who's 8 years younger. There's probably a athleticism edge in Crute's favor. On the flip side, Anthony Smith is considerably better than anyone Jimmy's faced in his career. Like, there's a big, big gap. And even this Anthony Smith, I'm not talking about, you know, a year or two ago. This Anthony Smith is still probably better than anybody Jimmy Crute's faced thus far. Another little nugget, you know, wouldn't make me change my pick, but this is only the second time Jimmy Crute's fought in the United States. You know, he fought in the Dana White's Contender Series in July 2018. That's the only time he's ever fought in the United States. That's not enough to get me to change my pick, but that's something to keep in the back of your mind. Mm-hmm. There's an durability issue for me that I'm having a hard time getting by. I'm going to take Crute. The reason I took Weidman was I didn't think there was much of a difference between him and Hall. Like, even if I'm concerned about Weidman's durability issues, I'm not sure Uriah Hall, who is the same age at age 36, has enough left in the tank to make up whatever Weidman lacks. If Anthony Smith isn't ready to go, Jimmy Crute is young enough and talented enough to make him look really bad.
Yep.
And that's my real concern. You know, the losses to both Glover Teixeira and Alexander Rocic last in the middle of 2020. You know, look, Glover's going to fight for a title. Rocic is, you know, on the verge of getting in that picture. you know, you can lose those fights. But the problem is I don't have the win over Devin Clark in November doesn't do anything for me. This is really a fight Anthony Smith kind of has to have if he wants to stay on the fringes of title contention.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I don't know. I think those days are probably over when we talk about fringes of title contention. Yeah, they probably – The Glover Teixeira fight, I feel like that took years off his life. I mean, Glover just beat the crap out of him.
Didn't stop him.
Yeah, Smith, that one that should have been stopped anytime in the whole fourth round. And, you know, the tides were turning in the third round pretty bad. And just Smith ate shot after shot after shot of ground and pound.
That was one of the worst ones we've seen. Jason. And that's surprising because Jason Herzog. Well, and Jason Herzog really.
I mean, again, Smith's got 48 fights, right? So if Smith's still moving around to some degree as a ref, you want to give him the benefit of the doubt, but he was so done. He was so donezo. Don't forget that too long before that, he could have been light heavyweight championship after he took that knee to the face while he was down from John Jones. So, yeah, 32, but he's a lot older in MMA years. And for that reason, you know, I'm going to pick Crute as well as the favorite. I'm going to get a little bit of him on DraftKings because I like his finishing odds. There's another side of this, though, where, you know, as much as I think about this, it's like, okay, Crute's 25 years old. He hasn't really faced anyone. Smith has miles and miles and miles and miles on experience. So as long as he can, you know, stay out of range and avoid the big, big shot, like Smith should be able to contend, and he might be tough to put away. But the miles on him are a little bit too much for me. I think this will be a little bit of a change in the guard. And, of course, Vegas has these odds this way for a reason. I think I got to go Crute overall when I'm making the pick.
Yeah, I mean, the one thing I'll say is there's nobody, you know, the Glover fight was the perfect example. There's nobody on the roster tougher than Anthony Smith. I mean, you know, he is as tough as nails. If there's anybody who's tough enough to pull an upset, it's him. It seems like a tall task to me.
Yeah. All right. So now we get to a real tough part of the show, John, where, you know, that was a difficult part of the prep for the show today is trying to find a handful of underdogs that might be viable or, you know, guys that you just might play to fill out your lineup here. And I was having a tough time, but I'll let you take the floor first. Did anybody stand out for you?
So not the two on the undercard. Which
I know you picked a couple in the column. So
I picked a couple. Did I see today that the Jeff Molina fight got canceled?
No, Molina's still on. There was an ID matching thing in her optimizer, but I think that's still on unless I missed that.
So I don't know. I thought I read something about that. Look, the two that interested me a little, one was Carl Roberson against Brendan Allen. Again, if all things being equal, I don't love it. Roberson 7,800, Allen's 8,400. Vegas odds, Roberson's plus 125, Allen's minus 145. So you're getting a plus 125 at about 7,800. That's decent value. Mm-hmm. Roberson has been inconsistent, but he's a good athlete. The other one who I didn't pick was Alex Oliveira against Randy Brown. Damn. Is that where you were going to go?
Yeah, so I was making my lineup here, all right? And listen, I didn't have this upset pick beforehand. I start with Usman because we talked about Usman, you know, versus Valentina. Who do you build around? So I start with Usman, right? And then I threw Uriah Hall in there for that leverage argument. And then I took your advice and I went Roberson. Then I put Jimmy Crute in there because I like his knockout props. Then I put Jeff Molina at 8,000 because it's basically a pick 'em, you know, against his opponents. So there's a tiny bit of line value there. I was stuck with $7,600 left, and I'm looking through this whole list thinking, geez, like, you know, what? Tristan Connolly maybe look good against Diego Ferreira, but Sabatini seems to be a good deal making his debut, you know, big favorite, you know, dominate a little bit on the regional scene. I ended up going Oliveira. And I like Randy Brown. I think Randy Brown's a good fighter, but Oliveira's a little bit more experienced, and he's not going to be fazed by this, and he's not going to just get overwhelmed by Randy Brown. And plus, Randy Brown is coming off a pretty a vicious knockout there to Vicente Luque. He's been knocked out by Nico Price before, so, you know, he can be got, and, you know, maybe Oliveira can get him, you know. But again, not because I feel great about it. He was just like the best of the bad options with a little bit of salary I had left.
Yeah, and I mean, Randy Brown is more of a striker than a submission guy. And Alex Oliveira, who fights a ton, he fights like three times a year every year. Every time you look around, he's fighting. He's been knocked out once in his career. That was against Yancy Medeiros back in December 2017. So, you know, it's there's an athleticism difference. You know, Randy Brown's far more athletic and far more fluid than Alex Oliveira is. But both guys have struggled with consistency. You know, Randy Brown has like legitimate skills, and he's pretty big at the division. You know, he's 6'3", but there's a gap as far as, and you know, he was knocked out by Vicente Luque in his last fight. I'm like, okay, whatever. You know, Vicente Luque is really good. Before that, you know, submitted Worley Alvarez, knocked out Brian Barberina. But then he was knocked out by Nico Price. And, you know, like Nico Price is like a one-dimensional striker where, you know what you're getting before you step into the octagon. So
what do you think would be a good matchup for him? Yeah.
Yeah, you would. I mean, there's been up and down from both guys. I mean, this is one of those cards where I would absolutely 100,000,000% advocate doing all you can to construct the majority of your lineup out of the main card and the first card on the undercard, the first fight on the undercard.
Yeah, I mean, not only knowing what you're going to get, but taking advantage of those five-round fights, you know?
Yeah, they're a fighter, you know, we'll get fighters on the undercard sometimes where it's one fighter we know a little bit about against somebody who we don't know much about at all. I mean, you're getting fights on the undercard here where like there are multiple fighters where we know like nothing, like
two fight sample sizes.
I mean, say what you want about, you know, Uriah Hall or Chris Weidman, where you know you're not sure, but like we've seen a million Uriah Hall and Chris Weidman fights. We know the skills of the guys. Yeah. We've seen Anthony Smith for 50 times. You know what you're going to get with Anthony Smith. Some of the other fighters, they're big, big risks.
Mm-hmm. I think there are four people debuting on here and then like two or three more with only one or two fight under their belts. So, yeah, it's a lot of wild cards. So, like, props to I got to hand it to like Chris, who made projections for these guys for our optimizer. And those guys are going to try to make some sense out of those fights at Fight IQ on Friday. So good for him. I was looking at some lineup building strategy here, you know, kind of coming back to the beginning. Jessica Andrade is 6,700. She's the cheapest on the card. And even if you don't think they're going to win, I mean, Andrade, Masvidal, if you want to use five favorites in your lineup, you almost got to start with one of those 6,700, 6,800s and hope for the best. Maybe at least you're getting someone in a five-round fight, and then you can use favorites largely the rest of the way, especially if you use someone with line value like Molina or Weidman, you know, that's on there. So I'd never like to punt one spot, especially in GPPs, because it pretty much rules you out. But you could hope for a miracle and take that strategy to build lineups this week. I don't know. I was having a hard time.
Yeah, it's certainly, you know, we would both tell you to work off the main card and go from there. Like, even if it means you have to, you know, try and punt with Masvidal or Andrade or, you know, whatever. It's certainly, you certainly should use the main card as your base no matter which way you go, whether you use it as your base for higher price fighters or your base for lower price fighters, because there's a steep sudden drop off and it doesn't get much better as you go down, and it's hard to find those ones to fill out your lineup.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I'm 100% with you there. So I think we're going to leave it at that. I mean, we'll keep watching the weigh-ins and everything through the week. Stay tuned. Give at RotoWire MMA a follow for all the latest news. Make sure we can avoid any cancellations, anything like that. I want to thank everybody for listening again to the RotoWire Mixed Martial Arts podcast. Once again, give John a follow on Twitter. That's at John Litterine, at JONLITTERINE. You can follow me at Jake Litarski, or I'm Jake Litarski. You can follow me at Roto Jake. And then John will be back before UFC 262, Charles Oliveira against Michael Chandler. That is the next
one
up.
That's a good fight.
That is a very
good
fight.
That is a good fight.
Not what a lot of people thought the lightweight division was going to do next, but with Poirier McGregor kind of going to get it on an international fight week, this is the best fight they can make, and I'm excited. That lightweight division is
loaded. I got no problem with that one.
And then we've got Gaethje hanging around in the background, too. He's one of my favorite fighters to watch, and they can just do a lot. So it should be a good year as we get into the second quarter of 2021. A lot of good fights, live crowds. Should be a blast, John.
Yep. Looking forward to it. Nice to have a card with fans in the stands.
Mm-hmm. Yes, and of course, thanks as always for getting together with me today, and best of luck with your lineups.
Absolutely.
Everyone is talking about magnesium. It's all you hear about. But why? What do we know about magnesium? Well, magnesium is the number one mineral that 75% of Americans are deficient in. If you are a woman over 35, magnesium will help you rediscover balance, energy, and vitality.
Magnesium supports more than 300 enzymatic reactions in your body, including those involved in hormonal balance. From functional medicine doctors to mental well-being and female hormone experts, we all know that magnesium is the one mineral to improve all aspects of well-being and health. But which one? Magnesium Breakthrough from Bioptimizers, the trusted choice recommended by leading experts, with 7 best-absorbed forms of magnesium to ensure your body receives the support it needs for overall well-being. Go to bioptimizers.com/balance today and use code BALANCE10 for 10% off. Support your journey to wellness at bioptimizers.com/balance. Magnesium Breakthrough from Bioptimizers, your foundation to optimal health and vitality.